Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
G'day, mate. How you going? This is the Lethal Mullet and I'm O'Brien here in Quinlan's Cantina, sitting down with a nice cold bevy and getting into, of course, another episode. Episode number 157, The Phantom. Yes, we've been wanting to do this for a while and I wanted to wait till I got a Blu-ray copy of The Phantom, which is pretty elusive, just like The Phantom, folks. It's a great character. It's a beloved character here in Australia. One that has been in print in comic books since about 1930-something. Like, it's been forever. I remember collecting these great comics, ever since I was about 9 years old. Now, these have always been on the shelves in news agencies and, everything from supermarkets to even 7-Elevens here in Australia. You can get yourself a copy of The Phantom. Now, it was made into a movie in the 90s, of course, with Billy Zane, and later they made, a Sci-Fi Channel miniseries of the same. And, again, that was kind of given kind of a Chris Nolan-style feel and maybe a James Bond feel to it, too, a bit of Casino Royale thrown in there. It's actually quite good. If you can find that, it's worth checking out. We'll talk a little bit about that for a little bit. But also, the Phantom itself is a character. You know, the Ghost Who Walks is my favourite comic book character. Yes, well above all your Marvels and all of your... even Batman, folks. I actually like it more than Batman. You know, he's the ultimate swashbuckler. He's also fearsome and, you know, fearless as well as, you know, a Caped Crusader in this case. Well, one that's just wearing basically an outfit and was without a doubt one with the elements, you know. There's been cartoons about the character. There's been everything. There's even now board games. And, of course, Frew Publications. Big shout out to those guys. They do a fantastic job here in Australia putting out those comics. You know, I mean, of course, the Phantom's known worldwide, folks, not just in Australia, but here in particular, the license is done by Frew Publications, who do a fantastic job every week putting out copies of The Phantom, different versions of it, then annuals and stuff like that. A lot of it is, of course, from, different eras of The Phantom and stuff like that, and brought out in both color and black and white. And we'll definitely be chatting a little bit about that tonight. But before we get into The Phantom tonight, here's how you can catch the Lethal Mullet Podcast and many others like it here on the Lethal Mullet Network. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Phantom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. So, big news, folks, if you're a spicy fan. And I'm talking about the Spice Girls. I'm talking about, of course, Frank Herbert's Dune. That's right, Dune, which was just such a huge hit when it come to the particularly the fans like myself. Well, it certainly stirred the pot because David Lynch now wants to do a proper director's edition, director's cut of his 1984 classic, folks. It's an amazing film, Dune. It's not for everyone, but tell you, as a lot of Dune fans are really getting back into that film. And the advent, of course, Denis Villeneuve's absolute classic film, Dune. In the past year, obviously, knocking out this amazing new direction, this new cinema series of Dune, which we're going to have. And currently in July this year, they're going to actually be putting the stamp on Dune 2. That's right. Called Dune Part 2. And who knows where that's going to go, folks. I mean, Denis is already tempting that he's going to be doing a Dune 3, which will be Dune Messiah. Tentatively just called Messiah or Dune Messiah. But at this stage, that's where we're headed, folks. We, you know, obviously, we've got the also the Sisterhood, the TV series that they've been talking about as well. That's all on the cards, folks. It's all out there, and who knows where it's going to go. I'll tell you what, I'm excited. I've been a Dune fan for almost 30 years. You know, it's huge. Certainly something that I'm keen to see moving forward. And I've got to say, it's awesome. Now, couple of films we're not going to do episodes on because I think they're very much films that you either grew up in the 80s and knew them and the 90s too, but these are films you need to check out. Now, they're called FX and FX2, starring, of course, Brian Dennehy and, of course, the other Brian, the Aussie one, the legend Brian Brown. Yes, from Breaker Morant and, of course, all the others like Two Hands and countless other films like Cocktail and others. Brian Brown's pretty much one of the greatest actors Australia's ever had the pleasure of having on screen. Very talented, very serious actor, but also has great comic timing. Always been great on screen. Brian Brown himself has always been in interesting projects, and FX is one of those ones which was an action thriller idea where he's a special effects artist on films, but always got embroiled in some type of controversy with the police, where he's used to use his effects, whether it's to take out a target and something like that, and then of course it all goes haywire, and then they all frame him for the murder that is actually real. So this is the sorts of things we get to see, and of course Brian Dennehy plays the cop that's sort of trying to chase him down in those films, and you know, both of them are actually quite strong, very much similar in what they're trying to do, again using the same plot ideas, even in the second one as well. But Brian Brown really punches out a fantastic performance. I always say, if you're going to check out Brian Brown's work in Australia, check out Two Hands, starring, of course, Heath Ledger as well. It's a great Aussie crime sort of film. It covers all the bases when it comes to crime and comedy and just stupid crooks. You know, you'll also see some very funny Aussie actors who, you know, handing firearms and you go, "Hey, shooty's a good mate. Shooty's a good, eh?" You'll know it when you see it, folks. But it's up there with Chopper in terms of, you know, comedy. Very much, you know, Aussie when it comes down to what it is as well. It's great. But FX and FX2, if you could find those on Blu-ray, it's going to be hard, but you definitely can find them on DVD. Check them out, folks. Another one we've just got in is, of course, By the Sword, starring, of course, F. Murray Abraham and Eric Roberts and Mia Sara. We're going to be looking at that in a couple of weeks' time. Hopefully, we can get Lee Filling's disc from, of course, Blood of Kings on the show. It's a great film about fencing and swordplay and, of course, all the dynasties of when it comes down to instructors, students, and of course, generations of instructors and students, and of course, bitter rivalry. And that's all going to be in that podcast. It's going to be great. I've finally got a copy of it on DVD here in Australia. It's hard to find. If you can find it on VHS, most likely, but if you can find the DVD, I found a UK copy. They're fantastic and worth checking out, folks. But I digress. We need to get back into, of course, chatting about the film in question today. And that is, of course, the one, the only, The Phantom.
Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy, D, you know? Oh, wow.
Right,
yeah.
Mate.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Yeah. It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, having a nice, you know, cold beverage.
Here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
The Phantom, folks. What a character. Certainly one of the oldest, if not the oldest, comic book character out there. Certainly when it comes to superheroes, you know, it's certainly right up there with probably one of the, if not the first, but definitely the first costumed crime fighter. Character, of course, from the fictional country of Bengala, and it was created by, of course, Lee Falk on a the comic strip style format back in February 17, 1936. That's right. It's a long while ago, folks. Got to say, you know, amazing character. I've always had an affinity for this character. I got to say, as a kid, always sort of thought it, you know, it's a dark character, but it's also a very positive, hopeful character too. And I love the fact that it's a character that's one with nature, you know, more so than any other superhero. You know, I always grew up obviously with you know, all the superheroes that all of you out there follow, even to this day, whether it be Marvel. You know, Spider-Man was a huge hero of mine as a kid. Batman, predominantly. I mean, Batman's always been my go-to, you know, hero, if you like. You know, vigilante, not superhero as such, I guess. But certainly, when it comes to heroic traits, you know, that's what I've always looked to. And it's sort of a darkness, because I think there's something about that that needs to be, for me, when it comes to characters, to scare the living bejesus out of, you know, the crime fighters, crime that they're trying to take on, the criminals, the, you know, the underworld and all that sort of thing. And there's something quite scary about the Phantom, you know. The look is quite a fearsome look, particularly in some of the revised ideas that they've done over the years, and that we'll talk about some of that a little bit later, folks. But what I love about the Phantom is that, you know, you can be out in the jungle in his territory, the territory of the Phantom, Bengala, the jungle, wherever it is, and, you know, he can just come at you from any side and, you know, take you. And obviously he's got, you know, many wild animals that are, you know, his friends, as long as well as, you know, people in the jungle themselves that are living in the country itself, which are all, of course, friends, and you know, always want to help the Phantom, because the Phantom obviously is a friend of everybody out there. So that's what I loved about it. And the unity of that community in the Phantom. You know, obviously there's always going to be, you know, good guys, bad guys, because of the nature of what it is being a superhero style comic. But also there's a real beautiful harmony that they've got set out there for the Phantom itself. And obviously too, there's the idea that the, you know, the ghost who walks, it's an immortal character, although we know the real story of what that is. And you know, it's timeless that the you know, the great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather handed it down the line to the current Kit Walker, all the way down from the pirate that got shipwrecked against, obviously, you know, the pirates of the Sang Brotherhood, all that sort of stuff, you know. And it's an interesting idea as a whole, and I've always enjoyed in particular that, you know, the mystery of that, and the fact that, you know, the Sing Brotherhood itself, you know, has been the enemy for him, the ultimate enemy, if you like, no matter where it is in the comics, and it keeps rearing its head to take him on. You know, it's like in Star Wars, the Empire against, you know, the rebels. In this case, that's what they're facing, is this criminal enterprise that's been around since the time of pirating, or pirates. So I love that. But it's also a very hopeful character. You know, it's one that's very positive. Obviously, we know the purple leotard outfit, the obviously the eyes have got that really amazing sort of quality of being there but not there at the same time. You know, do you know if the Phantom's looking at you or not through those, you know, the whited out eyes of the visor that he's wearing? Also, just too, the, you know, he's got the 245s. So that's interesting always, and always liked looking back at the comics when they're looking at the different weapons that he's had over the years. You know, obviously, back in pirate times, he's using a flintlock pistol and some type of saber or some type of sword, all right? And as we moved up through the ages, then, of course, it moves with the times of the firearms up to probably using, who knows, some type of revolver through, obviously, the 1800s and vice versa. There's so many interpretations of the character over the years. And, of course, it's such a worldwide phenomenon. The Phantom is still, to this day, one of the most celebrated comic books out there. It never took off in the States as much as it has out here. It's extremely popular out here in Australia. And it's one of the reasons, I think, picking Billy Zane to play the character in this film was so good, because when he did Dead Calm out here with, of course, Nicole Kidman and Sam Neill, he did that film, and, you know, one of the things, he was going to the newsagents like us Australians do, and, you know, picking up copies of that comic and getting into it, and really realizing, hey, well, you know, I haven't seen this in ages, because, again, it's one that's been constantly in print, never out of print, ever. in Australia since 1936, whenever it started here for the Australian side of it. And, you know, there's different parts of Europe where it's continued, different parts of the world here and there, where it's just continued no matter what. I mean, DC Comics, I believe, took it on at one stage, and a variety of others. There's been futuristic versions of the Phantom going up to, like, 2099, what they've done. And they've done even some amazing cartoons of the Phantom. Now, you remember the Phantom got together with Mandrake the Magician and Flash Gordon. And, of course, it became Defenders of the Earth in the 80s, which was a great cartoon based on all the characters, of course. And if you're a fan of the Flash Gordon in particular, it was great because Ming the Merciless was the bad guy in that series, and it was much more geared towards the actual comic books themselves. Such a fantastic run. If you can find the box set, it's actually a better rewatch than you think. It's not quite as... I thought it would have dated a lot more than it did. But it's certainly Saturday morning cartoon at its best. And the one I did get was a truncated version of the series turned into feature films, or at least TV movies that were put out sometime in the 80s, I would say. Again, they do this with some of the anime that you see over the years. You know, there's been versions of the Ghost of the Shell, Standalone Complex, where they've done that as well. Another great series, folks. Starring, of course, Richard Epcar as Batal. That's right. Batal. Now, what I love about the character, too, is the fact that him being a little bit like Batman, he comes out of the shadows and strikes the fear into criminals. That's such a big element of the character, but also, you know, his prowess as a fighter as well. He's, you know, an amazing hand-to-hand combatant. Gymnast as well. We can do all the different moves that gymnasts can do. You know, handsprings, flips, trips, all that sort of stuff. And of course, he's an amazing marksman, which is a big part of the character. That's what I love about it. Always been keen to it. And certainly something that we're getting into now with, you know, look at, obviously, to the idea of the series itself. All right, let's give you a little bit of a background on the character. He comes from Benguela, which is a fictional African country. And, of course, there's the idea of this myth out there that those that don't know the Phantom is that the Phantom is the ghost who walks. He's a guardian of all innocent people and, of course, fights against all types of injustice. So they seem to see that he's immortal, that he's been around for generations, 20 generations in all. But, of course, of those 20 generations, they're, of course, of the Kit Walker line of that family who swear the oath of, I swear to devote my life to the destruction of piracy, greed, cruelty, and injustice in all their forms, and my sons and their sons shall follow me. So, of course, this goes all the way back to, you know, the times of Christopher Columbus. Because the first Phantom goes all the way back to marrying a character by the name of Christina, who is the daughter of a Norwegian sea captain by the name of Eric the Rover. And, of course, the second Phantom then married Marabella, who ends up being, of course, this the granddaughter of Christopher Columbus. So what's interesting about it, the character being a generational character like that, is that you can set stories in flashback formats, and it's something that we get to see Billy Zane's character of Kit Walker talk to his father about some of those ideas, kind of a little bit like looking at the ghost of Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Star Wars films, kind of like that. He can hear through reading these books and or these diaries that the previous many fandoms before him have left information about their times as the Phantom themselves. And so it's interesting, and particularly in the film itself, we get to see some of that, which is great. So going back to all the times as far back as 1506, folks, so it's a long while back. So it basically started out with a young sailor by the name of Christopher Walker, born in 1516. His father was also named Christopher Walker, and it moves on from there. Obviously, the big thing is that it passes on the title of the Phantom to the next son in line and vice versa, the next person in the family. He's got his own base called Skull Cave. So, you know, yeah, again, a lot of ideas that would pretty much be picked up by Batman, many other characters that get their own cave, Bat Cave, in this case, Skull Cave. And obviously, too, the Phantom himself is the head of Bengala's Jungle Patrol. He's the commander. So it's something that he's, you know, obviously a bit part of. Kit Walker is the 21st Phantom when we get to this. And he's obviously his birth name being Kit Walker. And, you know, he's, you know, got so many generations before him. So you think about the wealth in the library, the Phantom's own library of all the information that they've had against whether it be the Singh Brotherhood or many of the other different, you know, enemies that they've faced. It's all there. So that's what makes him so good. And he's got a genius level intellect. Like, he's absolutely one of the smartest people out there. Like, again, ideas that you'll see Bruce Wayne becoming later on down. Obviously, he's, you know, got skills as a fighter as well. You know, he's a hand-to-hand combatant at a very extreme level. So he knows everything. And that's what makes the character, for me, so endearing, is he doesn't really have superpowers. He's just the ultimate in, you know, genealogy when it comes to, I guess, intelligence, strength, ability, skill, everything. And, of course, being just a good guy, you know. And I think that's what, you know, heroic people in this case, particularly going back to 1936, you know, we all look towards, is something to look up to. And a good person is always somebody that we all should be looking up to. That's why I was always looking forward to this film. In 1996, we got the news that Billy Zane was shooting a movie with Simon Winsor, the amazing Australian director of Lonesome Dove here, which was called The Phantom. And, you know, this was the 90s where I was, you know, still collecting some of the comic books. I'm like, wow, of all people, Billy Zane. And I always thought Billy Zane was one of the coolest actors out there. Obviously, spent a lot of time in Australia. He had a great affinity for Australian film, and of course, the Australian film, you know, actors and directors and stuff like that. So he was always somebody who had a foot in the door here for some of the roles ever since he did Dead Calm, and he's continued to come to Australia to do film and television as well here. And he's beloved. He did obviously the great action film Sniper. And of course, that is a great one for us Aussies to watch, because when he's meant to be going into the bush, we can see him clearly on a Queensland Railways train heading into what is meant to be Panama or something like that in the film. Great movie. And of course, that's got its own history as well, which I'll get into. And particularly an interesting one for myself as well at the time, which we'll get into. I was a teenager when that came out. So I was involved in something called the Army Cadets. Never in the Army itself, but kind of like Boy Scouts or Military College. We were very close to where some of that was happening at the time when it comes to some of the training that Tom Berenger and, of course, Billy Zane was going through too, and we heard some fun stuff when it came to that too. Obviously, a lot of it too from the Army guys involved in it, and of course, you know, they had people training in the Marine style, because it was a US Marine they were playing in it. But Billy Zane comes in as somebody to be working with the SWATs, so the police snipers. So it's a little bit different, but great movie, folks, which we'll get into. It's a fun one. You know, obviously, it's got a little franchise to itself too. Billy Zane's a great actor. Obviously, he's done Demon Knights. Probably my favorite thing he's done. Obviously, Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, where he basically plays the devil, or the devil's helper, if you like, up against William Sadler. And quite an amazing cast. Again, one we'll cover. We've covered before in a previous podcast channel that I was running years ago, and it's a beloved film. Luckily, I've got a great Blu-ray of that one too, which we'll definitely cover. It's a fantastic film. Great Friday night at the movies if you can do it, and one that I think it's got equal parts horror, action, comedy, everything. To me, it's up there with The Thing. That's how good. Yes, I said that, folks. You can quote me on that. It is as good as, you know, John Carpenter's The Thing. But Billy Zane in this is great. Obviously, he's playing, you know, the role of Kit Walker. He plays it with such a dashing presence, but also tough when needs to be, but also he's even-handed when it comes to what he needs to get the job done. He's, without a doubt, perfectly cast in the role of the Phantom. And I do remember him being on Australian News Entertainment here in 1995 when he's shooting the film. And when he was doing that, it was interesting because he was, you know, buffing up for the role, getting not only strong and big, because he was getting quite muscular for the role, but he's also being limber enough with it, with flexibility, gymnast training, all that sort of stuff, and different types of fighting that he was learning. Because the Phantom is interesting. You wouldn't call it specifically martial arts that he does. You know, it's very much more like Indiana Jones style fighting, you know. And that's always been the tone, I think, that was fitting, or at least fitting for the Phantom in that era. To me, still, you know, I would, because it's got that adventurous quality of, you know, the 1930s, 1940s sort of feel. And that's definitely what they're going for in the film. You can certainly get that feel. I've always, you know, had that thought that that's perfect for what it is. We'll jump to it now, but obviously they rebooted it in about 2009. And it was a two-part miniseries which came out. It was one that was mixing, you know, equal parts, still have the mythology of the Phantom there, but also jumping it forward enough. Not, I would say, futuristic. That wasn't what they were going for. But they were trying to, you know, really ground what the Phantom would be like in the current society. So, if anything, it's a spiritual sequel to the 1996 film. I thought it was actually very well done. Shot in Canada, by the look of it. Certainly got a lot of local Canadian actors we've seen in Battlestar Galactica and Stargate SG-1. And without a doubt, it certainly has a feel of two things that really made it strong for me when I watched that reboot. Casino Royale, they used definitely a feel of the Casino Royale feel of that. But also, Batman Begins in such a big way. And I'm really firm believer they set out with the best of intentions to do that. they certainly took the Ra's al Ghul idea and sort of put a spin on it in the actual show itself. It's a great one. There's a lot of that jumping around that we see, you know, certain freestyle runners or free runners, what do they call it? In it as well, and they added that to the Phantom's repertoire, and it's certainly something that he uses in it, or in this case the younger Kit Walker, who gets to see it, and he certainly gets his own suit, which is souped up like we see in the Dark Knight, you know, and you know that sort of idea of turning it into a piece of armor, and of course they souped up the 45s as well. It wasn't perfectly successful, certainly didn't hit where they needed to do a full series, but it's an interesting property when it comes to that idea, folks. I think they certainly know, even some of the newer comics that have been done by different publications in the States and vice versa had different ideas of what to do with the Phantom itself. You know, they got rid of the actual costume, and I think one of the comics almost looked like they put a blood or running blood over the Phantom to give it that sort of purple sepia sort of tone over him, and that was what freaked out the bad guys that he was going after as he became the Phantom. Again, very interesting idea. I think that's, you know, modernizing to a certain point and, you know, striking the fear into these criminals that are out there in the jungles, you know, or wherever they are. It's one of those properties that can be changed and brought in those times. But at this stage, folks, let's look at the actual film itself now. Yeah, I've probably spoken enough about how much I love this movie. Let's look at the cast of this 1996 classic. Billy Zane is the Phantom. Treat Williams as Xander Drax. Treat Williams, what an actor. Love this guy. He was in the sequel to The Substitute. Believe it or not, that is a film that was done by Tom Berenger. And Treat Williams, actually, I personally think was in the better film. The film The Substitute 2 had some great Aikido in it, great martial artistry in it. Christy Swanson as Diana Palmer, the love interest, and one tough, amazing character in this. Catherine Zeta-Jones plays Sulla. James Remar plays Quill. Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa plays the great Kublai Khan. Patrick McGowan plays the Phantom's father, the 20th Phantom. Austin Peters plays the Phantom as well in flashbacks. Samantha Egger plays Lily Palmer. Dane Farwell plays Breen. And, of course, one of the many young guns, Charlie Bowdre. Casey Siemiatko plays Morgan.
David Provol plays Charlie Zephyr. You'll know David Provol from a lot of stuff over the years. He's known for playing Tony DiVianazzo in the Martin Scorsese film, of course, Mean Streets. He was in The Shawshank Redemption. And, of course, very well known for The Sopranos, yes. So, that, you know, again, interesting ones for those ones too. John Tenney played Jimmy Wells. Leon Russom played Mayo Krebs. Bill Smithrivich plays Uncle Dave. John Capodici plays Al the Cabbie in it. And, of course, he's got some great scenes where he's getting paid by the Phantom in rubies and different things here and there. Australian regular and English regular Robert Colby plays the captain of the Jungle Patrol in this too. It keeps going too. We've got John Prosky playing the cycle cop, Bo Kane playing the mountain cop, and on, folks. And again, amazing. I mean, this is, again, a film which actually has a really powerful cast for the time. The film itself shot on the Gold Coast and Thailand and a few other spots in and around Australia and, of course, the areas near Thailand itself. And the screenplay was done by Jeffrey Boehm, and it's actually inspired by a number of the Phantom stories itself. And one of the things I've done with my Phantom collection, I was actually able to get those, particularly the ones that were all about like the Sky Band, which is very much part of what it's about, the Singh Brotherhood and the Belt as well, all came together to give an influence for the direction of this story, which is quite amazing. Directed, of course, by Simon Windsor. Folks, Simon Windsor, one of our greats, goes all the way back to the early 1960s, where he was working on Channel 7. And, of course, he he's done amazing films. Obviously, Free Willy, one of the big ones. But his filmography is just huge. He did 1980 Harlequin. He did, of course, the 85 kids film Daryl, if you remember that one. Then, of course, in 87, one of my all-time favorite World War I films, alongside Gallipoli, about, of course, The Light Horseman. Now, if you're Australian, you'll know that film. Played all the time in the late 80s, early 90s on TV, particularly on Saturdays. Be one of those movies you watch Saturday matinee, if you like, you know. It was great. And, of course, he did, after that, Quigley Down Under. Can you believe it? Quigley Down Under, folks. Amazing. And, of course, the list goes on here, folks. Simon's done just some of the greatest action films ever. Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. Can you believe it, folks? Now, that is a mullet movie. Yes. Of course, Free Willy in 93. 94, Lightning Jack with our very own Crocodile Dundee, Paul Hogan. Yes. Of course, Operation Dumbo Drop was done in 95. Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles after that. And, of course, The Young Black Stallion in 2003. And, of course, The Cup in 2011. Now, on TV, you might know some other ones he's done. Some very famous ones. One of them being, of course, in 1989, the beloved Lonesome Dove, folks. Yes. Lonesome Dove. About, of course, Augustus McRae and friends. Amazing. He also worked on the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, the Flash TV show, Murder, She Purred, also Crossfire Trail, Ponderosa, Monty Walsh, Into the West, and, of course, in 2008, the prequel to, of course, Lonesome Dove. And it's a great novel as well, just like the original Larry McMurtry one. And, of course, that is Comanche Moon. Amazing. We'll definitely look at some Larry McMurtry stuff here. Of course, those two are fantastic. They've done pretty much all of them. They did Streets of Laredo and the earlier years as well. But Comanche Moon's actually really, really just amazing. You know, folks, Carl Urban and Steve Zahn taking on the roles by, of course, originally played by Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall. Amazing. Really is one of the greats. So, obviously, based on the characters created by Lee Falk, the movie itself was produced by Alan Ladd Jr. and Robert Evans. Hey, there you go. There's an amazing set of producers. And music by David Newman. produced by, of course, Village Roadshow Pictures, Hearst Entertainment, and The Lad Company, and was put out by Paramount. It was released in June 7, 1996. I still remember to this day, folks. And, of course, on a budget of $45 million and only made just under half. And that was, of course, actually just over half, $23.5 million back in box office. So it began in 1995 in October, and it concluded in February 13, 1996. Little shots of the film were done in California, Australia at Village Roadshow, and, of course, at Movie World, I guess, known, of course, as Hollywood on the Gold Coast. If you go to Movie World, you can actually see the main street where they did a lot of these scenes. And I do believe they did some in Brisbane as well as Australia there. So California, Thailand, and Australia. And the film certainly is a cult film to this day. It's certainly one that's looked after too. The story starts, of course, where we get to see the evil Cabai Sang, his background with the Sang Brotherhood, and of course, we get to see the first Phantoms, start out, of course, years and years later. And then it jumps through to 1938, where Kit Walker, who's the 21st Phantom, finds Quill, of course, the bad guy, who is, after he's dispatched, sees that he's wearing his father's belt. So he knows it's the guy that actually ended the life of his father. This takes him to New York City, where he's got his old college friend, an ex-girlfriend by the name of Diana Palmer, who's a traveler all over the world, and of course, a frequent one, and a frequent traveler with her uncle, Dave Palmer, and who owns basically, like a lot of those superhero ones, you have a newspaper involved. In this one, it's the World Tribune. One of those papers is being investigating the businessman, played by, of course, the Treat Williams, Xander Drax, who seems to be, an amazing man of the people when we see him in and around. And of course, there's a lot more to it. Of course, he's trying to find the ultimate power in the universe and find, obviously, the skulls that are going to give him this power, this, obviously, the MacGuffin of the film. And it is an interesting thing that they go through. Obviously, he's building this up through museums and stuff like that too. And he sees, the power that this is going to give him down the line. This takes, obviously, Kit Walker out of Bengala all the way out to, of course, New York, and then vice versa back to Bengala as well later. So it's an interesting film that, goes all around both areas. He sees a little bit like an Indiana Jones flavor to it too. Drax, obviously, is, the main big bad guy in this. But two, we also have Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa as the current Cabai Sang, who definitely knows what's happening with the Phantom itself as well. So it's interesting. We start to see the actual, down the line, the ins and outs of the circle and how things were going to go about. Sergio Leone, back in the day, actually wanted to make a film of this, and also they thought about one of the others was the idea of bringing Mandrake the Magician, which is another Lee Falk idea to the form. Joe Dante at one stage was going to direct a film for Paramount Pictures as well, and this was in the early 1990s, about 91-92. Of course, he developed it together with Jeffrey Boehm, and I think as it goes along, it obviously goes, towards what would become the Simon Winsor movie. Jeff Boehm is also known for another amazing action comedy from the 1980s, and that is, of course, Inner Space, Meg Ryan, Martin Short, and, of course, Dennis Quaid, which is a great little film, actually. Joel Schumacher, at one stage, was going to direct the film, but, of course, then it went to Simon Winsor. And, again, Simon's built to do this. His talent pool of skill and certainly action coordination when it comes to being a director. He knows how to handle horses, particularly from, his experiences on The Light Horseman. And, of course, Lonesome Dove, folks, all these westerns. One of the greatest westerns out there, folks. So really know what they're doing. Winsor obviously had the idea of casting Billy Zane. And, you got to look back on what us as Australians out here, particularly him being an Australian director, knew Billy Zane through his work on Dead Calm, he played a psychopath in that. But Zane himself, obviously, is a huge fan of the character. But also, at one stage, Bruce Campbell another actor from New Zealand by the name of Kevin Smith were up for the role as well. But, I mean, you could see it, folks, why, you know, Billy Zane is perfect for this. Anyways, to me, I still want to see him in a sequel, you know, even though there's two sequels lined up for this as well. I love the opening of the film, the opening in the jungle, obviously, against Quill, and, of course, Casey Shemaisko in it as well. Fantastic scenes. Christy Swanson and Billy Zane have a great chemistry together. It's fun, you know. But even his chemistry later on with Catherine Zeta-Jones, you know, a lot of that's played out well too. But also like his scenes with Patrick McGoohan, who's through, you know, his interactions, he's trying to teach his son, you know, all the lessons of life. And it's great. Again, kind of riffs on that whole idea of the Jedi ghost sort of idea. The ghost who speaks in this case. And it's great. And I love the set. The sets that were done were just bang on perfect. So that's what really worked for it too. The Los Angeles Zoo in Griffin Park was what was meant to be Central Park Zoo in New York City. And they used also the Hollywood Studio backlot streets to do New York City, all that sort of too. They then went to Thailand for about 6 to 7 weeks of filming, where they were doing, obviously, the scenes for Bengala and all that sort of thing too, which is really, really interesting too. Then by the time they got to December of that year, they went to Australia, and, of course, this is where they had used the 8 sound stages. And, of course, down the road from my place, the Village Roadshow Studios. And as you'll see around the place, it's billed as Brisbane, but I tell you, folks, it ain't Brisbane. It's the Gold Coast. Brisbane is not the one. but they did go to Brisbane to use our Brisbane City Hall, which is, you know, again, great place to use some of the scenes that we see for the 1938 era of it. And they used the interior lobby and made it more like the New York Museum there too. This is where he finds the three skulls of Tugunda, which, of course, are the MacGuffin of the film. And they also used the Manor Apartment Hotel for the New York skyscraper set as well too. They also did in Los Angeles, California, some other ones that were going to be for the final era of the film as well, but they wrapped in February of 1996. What I do love about this is that it really is an action-adventure, you know, a film that really builds on the mythology and, of course, the fun of the Phantom. You know, the Phantom is a fun character, folks. That's one thing that's missed in a lot of what we see in these newer versions of characters. You know, the Batman done by Matt Reeves, which is a great film, folks. I actually quite enjoyed that one. A tad bit long, I would say, but again, riffs on the whole Christopher Nolan idea of making a very serious film when you're doing comic book characters. So, we come to the end of the show, folks. What do I think of this film? Well, folks, you're going to be surprised. On the Hallenbach scale, this is a whopping 5 out of 5. It is a must. You've got to find the new Blu-ray edition of The Phantom. You can see Billy Zane on the front cover. Slam evil, folks. Slam it now. And, of course, it is a thriller minute, and it really is a slice of an earlier era before all these huge Marvel blockbusters where, you know, they banged out the entertainment the best they could, and it certainly delivers some fun action for you. This is the Lethal Mullet signing off. We'll catch you next time here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Hi, this is Tom Caldwell from Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast on the Phantom Podcast Network, inviting you to check out our show. Once a month, we release an episode about the films of the great master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. You can find us on Facebook at Hitchcock Good Evening, on Twitter at Good Evening Pod, and along with myself and Brandon Shea Mutala and Chris Haig, we bring you a fun and friendly show that you can enjoy alongside your viewing of the films of Alfred Hitchcock. On behalf of the program, I wish you good evening.
I sit here waiting. contemplating what's the best day. Watching that new movie. I'm the lethal moment. Wow, I'm the lethal. Wow, I'm the lethal. Oh, I'm the lethal moment.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, Fandom Flashback Show, End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and of course Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything. All covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild. An offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.